The good news is Wisconsin's honeybee decline is not indicative of a nationwide trend. We're learning about winter beekeeping and checking in on the honeybee situation here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Bee Lab at the University of Minnesota says honeybees are responsible for producing all U.S. honey, and the upper Midwest produces more honey than anywhere else in the nation. North Dakota leads the country in production. Beekeepers, do you keep bees in winter? How have you prepared them for the colder months? How has the pandemic affected you? Share and ask questions about beekeeping, 800-642-1234. The Dane County Beekeepers Association has an online community of hundreds of local beekeepers. Paul Zielinski is one. He focuses on breeding bees more adaptive to our winters. And he's treasurer of the Dane County Beekeepers Association. Paul, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Well, share your setup of beehives. What do you have going on?
So this year I'm going into winter with just over about 50 colonies, which is about half what I went into winter with last year. I kind of cut back a little bit just to focus a little bit more on their health, and I had poor overwintering results last year, which was not usual for me. So I wanted to kind of get back to the basics and see if I could figure out what went wrong last year. But yeah, I'm a real small time, borderline hobbyist, sideline beekeeper. I focus mostly on producing bees, and I've been trying to find more Wisconsin hardy winter adapted bees. And then I also split those bees in the spring and then sell what are called nucleus colonies or nukes to local beekeepers who are looking to start beekeeping.
What do you love about beekeeping?
Well, it's just a lot of fun. It's very interesting. I used to work at the DMV, and working out in the bee yard in the sun and the nature with the, the wind and the and all of that is just more fun and rewarding and enjoyable than working in a cubicle.
That's and, quite a difference.
Exactly. So I enjoy that. And it's beekeeping is always just kind of a fun puzzle. As much as we know a ton about bees and about beekeeping, it seems like everything is sort of constantly changing, and trying to adapt and figure out what the weather is going to do and how your bees are going to react and what needs to be done. It's kind of a permanent puzzle to work on, and that challenge interests me as well.
Oh, I love how you see it that way. Can you explain for us what is the life cycle of the honeybee? Can you take us through the life cycle?
Sure. So and when people think of bees, they mostly think of the forager bees, which is the most largest section of the population of a beehive. There's kind of three different types of bees. Obviously, everybody knows about the queen. And the queen, her life cycle is that she is raised. She leaves the hive once to mate. And then she comes back, and then she never leaves the hive again. She just stays in the hive laying eggs and producing the brood. There's also the drones, of course, which people have heard of, and those are the male bees. And their life cycle is just that they're kind of raised, and then they hang out being lazy. And every day they fly out to what they call drone congregation areas, looking to mate, and they wait for a queen to show up. And when she does, they mate, and that's about all they do with their life. And of course, the worker bees are a little more interesting. So they're first, laid as an egg, and then they turn into a larva for a little over a week. And that's when they're fed honey and bee bread and till they're capped off in the cell. So that's like the comb. They have each little cell, and they cap that over with wax. Well, that larva goes through transformation, kind of similar to a butterfly, and they turn into a bee. And then about 28 days later, they emerge as a adult bee, at which point they stay in the hive for a little while. They do sort of the nurse bee tasks, which is taking care of the other larvae that are coming up. They clean out, and then they kind of graduate into foragers, which is when they leave the hive. They start flying around looking for flowers to get nectar and pollen and bring that back to the hive. And then eventually they expire. And during the summer, that's usually about 4 to 6 weeks is the full life of a forager bee. And then, of course, in the winter, they actually raise special bees in the fall that are extra fat bees that are meant to last the entire winter. And those bees just stay in the hive and stay in their cluster, hoping that spring will come soon enough.
I just love how their lives are pretty straightforward. Each has a very purposeful position in the in all of the tasks and in all of how they all work together. It's just so it just is so clear cut and pretty amazing if all goes as planned.
Yeah, if everything goes as planned, you know, they've got a bunch of evolution behind them to try to, you know, sort it out. And it's kind of interesting how they sort of graduate through the stages and the different tasks. So the different bees kind of do most of the different things at different points in their life cycle, kind of starting out with the safest jobs and moving themselves in the more dangerous jobs as they get older until they eventually just sort of wear themselves out, you know, working for the hive.
We're talking with Paul Zielinski, who's with us for the hour. He's a beekeeper for about 10 years based in Dane County, treasurer of the Dane County Beekeepers Association. You can join in. Are you a beekeeper? Are your bees a hobby or maybe a full-time job for you? What's it like working with them? What mistakes have you made along the way? What have you learned? Join us. Tell us about your colony, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Paul, give us a status update, if you will, on the honeybee population here in Wisconsin and what production is like.
So I'm not completely in tune with the commercial beekeepers and things like that, but over the past years, it seems like the Wisconsin honeybee has been declining. And I don't know if that's just a less interest or less commercial viability, or if things have been getting more dangerous for the bees. I know that, there's a bunch of mites and diseases and things that have made beekeeping more challenging, and the survival has been more difficult. There's still plenty of beekeepers, though, and still plenty of bees. And it seems that hobbyist beekeeping has actually been on the rise, especially with all of the talk of the, you know, the challenges that beekeepers are facing and pollination being of more importance. It seems more people have taken that up in the hobbyist role if the commercial beekeeping has been slacking a little bit lately. But it is becoming more challenging. There's the mites, obviously, which you've mentioned are the biggest concern. And those mites also transmit a number of diseases, which make it more challenging for beekeeping as well.
Has the pandemic affected your beekeeping in any way?
It hasn't affected my beekeeping particularly, because I take care of my bees personally and I don't work with anybody. So it's actually a very safe activity for me to do, to go out to my bee yard and take care of my bees. It's very easy to social distance. I don't think bees can transmit it, so we're safe there. The one thing that has been challenging for me this year is I've been working on a project with the Low Tech Institute, where we're trying to breed mite-resistant, mite-tolerant bees using natural selection. When we were actually on the Larry Mueller show a while back to talk about that. Yeah. And we had intended to have a bunch of volunteers come and help with some of the work there and to do some outreach and education and teach just basic beekeeping techniques to some of the volunteers. And of course, because of the pandemic, we weren't able to do that. So we had to just kind of take care of the bees ourselves, which was a little more work than we had planned on, but everything's going well there as well. Of course, for many people, selling their honey is a lot more challenging.
Sure.
Farmers markets and things like that, which is a big outlet for many of the small beekeepers. Obviously, the commercial beekeepers who sell in stores and, you know, large packing plants and things probably are having noticeable changes to their thing, to their
finding the
their
market
selling
for
capability.
That.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
But farmers markets obviously are struggling, you know, in these times.
Talking with Paul Zielinski, a beekeeper in Dane County, what do you want to know about the kind of work involved in keeping a colony healthy? Have you had problems with varroa mites? What pesticides do you wonder about? How do you reduce the population of mites without harming the bees? Join in. Let's talk about it. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Paul Zielinski here on the Ideas Network. The USDA reported a modest increase in total U.S. honey production and honeybee colonies in the past year. We're looking at the honeybee situation in Wisconsin heading into the winter months here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The University of Minnesota Bee Lab says most of the honey in our region comes from nectar of clover and alfalfa flowers. Have you planted more nectar-producing bee-friendly plants? How is that going? Do you keep bees going in the winter months? How do you manage your bee yard? Join in 800-642-1234. We have Paul Zielinski, works to breed bees that are more adaptive to Wisconsin winters, and he's our guide. Let's take a call now. Donna is joining us from New Berlin. Hi, Donna. I understand you're a middle school teacher.
I am, and right now we're reading a book called The Secret Life of Bees, and so bees play a part in this book. And so I'm trying to give my students a lot of background information about bees and things like that. But one question I have is, just in Wisconsin, what do bees do in the winter since they can't really leave the hive and go forage for flowers? What do they do?
Well, they shiver and try to stay warm. and quite literally, that's what they do. So in the winter, they cluster up, we call it. And so all of the bees kind of form this tight ball of bees. And each of those bees in that ball actually sort of flaps their wing muscles, but they do the up and the down at the same time. So they're just vibrating those muscles to create heat. And then because they're all tightly clustered together, that heat keeps it warm. And then they eat a bunch of honey to do that. And the outside bees will sort of rotate to the middle, and the middle bees will rotate to the outside. So they'll keep that hive between 70 and 90 degrees warm all winter long, just by flapping those wing muscles and eating honey to stay warm. And then on the nice sunny days, if we get any, you know, temperatures above 50, a break in the heat, they'll fly out of the hive to relieve themselves. They don't go to the bathroom in the hive, so they have to hold it kind of all winter unless we get some breaks in with warm temperatures. And then they'll fly out and relieve themselves and come back and wait for spring.
Oh, amazing. Donna, does that help?
That does help. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for calling. So how do you, start to prepare the hive for winter? Is there anything you can do to help your bees survive the winter?
Absolutely. So I kind of always tell people in Wisconsin, winter is kind of the defining time of year for beekeeping. So basically all year, you're preparing your bees for winter, unfortunately. In the spring, they kind of wake up and they start expanding, and there's a short period of time where you're not really preparing for winter. They're building up, they're producing more bees. But then already in July or so, you should have winter in mind. So you should be doing something to keep your mite levels in check, obviously. And there's a bunch of disagreement on what that should be. Some people treat with chemicals, some people treat with less harsh, more natural methods, and some people are trying a bunch of different techniques of breeding mite-resistant bees, or using small cell comb where the cells are smaller to force the bees to mature more quickly, because that might keep the mite levels in check. And then as fall moves forward, if you've got your mite levels in check, you make sure that you have a nice, young, healthy queen. That's very important to the survival of the bees. And then I tend to feed in the fall after the final mite treatments to make sure that they have enough stores. So if you take too much honey, or if lately our fall has not been producing as much honey as normally would for the bees to store up enough honey for winter. So I feed them sugar water and sometimes artificial pollen if they need it. And then the one thing that I do that I think is very helpful that some people do it but isn't as common is I put dry sugar on the top of the hive. So the beehives, if people know what a beehive looks like, it's those boxes. And mm-hmm. The inside of those are the combs, and they have kind of a bar and then a frame with the comb. And on top of all of that, I'll lay a piece of newspaper, and then I'll put some dry sugar and I'll mist that to get it moist, or I'll mix that with just enough water. What I'm trying to do is just to get that sugar to kind of stick together and clump up, because you don't want it to be granulated. Because what's going to happen is throughout the winter, if they run out of honey, they'll hit that newspaper, they'll chew through that, and they'll have some emergency food in the form of that dry sugar. The other really helpful part about that dry sugar on top of the hive is it absorbs moisture. So I would say that bees are very good at keeping themselves warm as long as they keep themselves dry. But often, because the bees are keeping their hive 90 degrees and eating that honey, they're creating a lot of nice, warm, moist air. Mm-hmm. And when the air hits the top of the hive, where it's cold, you get a lot of condensation. And sometimes that condensation then will drip down onto the bees. And if they start getting dripped on in the middle of winter, it becomes very difficult for them to stay warm. So having that dry sugar on the top of the hive will absorb the moisture. And then if there are any drips, it'll drip into that sugar instead of onto the bees.
Well, they're just like us. We need to whisk our moisture away when we're out in the cold winter as well.
Exactly. It's much easier to stay warm when you're dry. And then you just kind of package them up, and many people will put up wind breaks, so something to block the wind when we get those real strong cold winter winds. Some people will wrap their hives in insulation. Some people will wrap them in like something like tar paper to help block the wind and insulate them. The important thing to keep in mind, though, is that the bees don't actually heat the hive throughout the winter. They heat that cluster of bees. So they've done some studies where the temperature inside the hive pretty much mirrors and matches the temperature outside. Or an empty box. But the bees are just keeping that cluster of bees warm. They're not heating the entirety of the hive. And they did some studies way back in the day at the University of Wisconsin where they actually cut the sides out of some hives. And so there was just no hive at all. And the bees seemed to overwinter just as successfully with that. Obviously, they did some things to, you know, block the winds and protect them from the elements.
Well, all I can say is bees are crazy efficient.
<It's true.
laughs> And we should learn from them. We're talking with Paul Zielinski for the hour. He's a beekeeper and with the Dane County Beekeepers Association. He focuses on breeding bees more adaptive to Wisconsin winters and selling those colonies. You can ask your question, share your stories about beekeeping, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. So, Paul, what do mites do to a hive?
Bad things. So what the mites are is they're these little bugs, obviously mites, that live in the hive, and they crawl around on the bees, and they'll actually lodge themselves on the bees and suck the hemolymph of the bees, which is kind of like the blood of the bees. Which weakens the bees. It's also, you know, penetrating them, which might be injecting diseases into them. And then the way that they breed is they actually, a female mite will crawl into the cell as that cell is being capped over with the larvae, and she'll feed off of that pupae as it's developing, and she'll lay eggs, and then those eggs will develop inside that cell, and then when that bee emerges, those mites will emerge with it. So you can imagine that while that bee is trying to develop in sort of its most delicate stage, it's being fed on by these mites. And the mites, comparably, if we had mites on us, the same size differential, it would be like we had dinner plate size mites living on us. Mites are not small, yet it's terrifying if you think of it that way. They can really weaken a hive. And the mites evolved with Asian honeybees, which are smaller and have a shorter time cycle. So in the Asian honeybee sides, they're natural prey, so to say, they only would go after the drones because the drones are larger and take longer to develop than the worker bees. So in their natural habitat, the mites didn't collapse the entire colony. They would only infest the drones, but the worker bees would still be healthy and strong. And at that point, they don't really damage the whole health of the hive. But when we put our European honeybees, which is what most people keep for honey production, into Asia, they made the transfer. And because our bees are larger, now they infest the worker cells and they can damage the entire hive instead of just the sort of useless male bees in the hive.
You mentioned the useless male. I love it. I love it. So you mentioned the use of pesticides that some people use to control mites. What are some ways, you know, there is a number of different ways to try to control the mites in the colonies, but what can be done to, what pesticides have been effective so far?
So, yeah, the mite treatments, as they're referred to often, is a very confrontational topic for many people. So originally people started using things like Humafos and some very harsh chemicals, and those proved to be effective originally, but the mites developed resistance to them, and they discovered that those treatments would build up in the comb over time and actually ruin the vitality of the drones and the queens and cause all sorts of difficulties and damage to the bees themselves. So people switched away from that. So the most common ones that people are using now is Apistan, which is basically the same as Tactic Ant Killer. And that's what many of the commercial beekeepers use. That's sort of the most harsh chemical that people are still using. That one has been effective. The bees so far have, there's some evidence now that they might be starting to develop a resistant, but it looks like it's very effective. And then the more natural things that people are using are formic acid, which is the same compound that ants produce that make them smell sort of sour and discourage animals from eating those. Or thymol, which is an extract from thyme, and it's the same thing that's in Listerine. So those are kind of the two natural chemicals that people are using. And then one of the newer things that people have been starting to use is oxalic acid, and that one, that's the, kind of the same thing that's in rhubarb that makes rhubarb sour. And so those are the most common things, and there's different ways to apply those to the hive. The formic acid and the thymol come in either a gel or a pad that you put in the hive, and then the warmth of the hive kind of fumigates. Whereas the oxalic acid, most people are actually using sort of a heating element that vaporizes that oxalic acid into the hive.
Fascinating applications. Beekeeper Paul Zelensky is with us. He's been a beekeeper for about a decade based in Dane County. What questions do you have about winter beekeeping? What do you want to know? Why do you marvel at honeybees? What have you watched them do? Have you considered becoming a beekeeper? What holds you back? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update on the Ideas Network. Wisconsin's honey production has been falling for years now. We're 16th in the nation. We're checking in on winter beekeeping in our state here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to UW-Madison's Grattan Lab, many bee species are in decline. Wild bee species like mason and mining bees are most at risk. How is your colony doing? What changes do you see from year to year? What's it been like as a beekeeper? Join in 800-642-1234. We have Paul Zelensky, a beekeeper and treasurer of the Dane County Beekeepers Association. He's our guide. Let's bring in Chris, who is joining us from Sabisky. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
I just have a question about going into winter. I've got just a couple of colonies, but I have two deep colonies right now, and two of them only have bees and brood in the upper deeps. And I'm wondering if I should go to just a one deep colony or if I should move that upper deep to the lower deep. What are thoughts?
Unfortunately, it seems that winter is coming relatively early this year. We've had some pretty cold temperatures. So we're getting to the point that there's not a lot of time left to do too much manipulation of your bees. So if you can find some more temperatures, it might be good to reduce down the colonies to a single deep. But honestly, it's not particularly important how much space they have once we get into the colder temperatures. The only reason to kind of collapse them down at this point would be if you're seeing any evidence of robbing and you need to have them more capable of defending the entrances. But you could also just reduce the entrances to help deal with that problem. Most of the bees this time of year will be starting to slow or stop production of brood anyway, so you'll probably start to see no brood. And personally, I'm done inspecting my colonies, at least thorough inspections of my colonies. So I've been feeding them and kind of just peeking in the top. And pretty soon I'll be preparing them for winter with that dry sugar, as I mentioned earlier. So I guess the concern I would have for your bees is if they are in the top deep and they have, you know, brood in the top deep, do they have enough stores and enough food to last through winter? So that would be my biggest concern. I tend to like my bees to have a full deep of honey to prepare them for winter to make sure that they have enough food. So if they're in that top deep with brood in that top deep, they probably don't have quite that much honey. So you might want to think about supplemental feeding if you can find warm enough temperatures to do so. Otherwise, if you put that dry sugar on the top, like I mentioned earlier, that could give them a way to have some emergency food throughout the winter. There's also products such as winter patties and things that you can put on to give them some emergency food if they don't have enough stores. But yeah, at this point in the year, the actual size of the space that they're in is less important than, you know, just having enough food and being ready for winter in that way.
Chris, does that help?
And it makes no difference. Yeah, but does it make no difference if all of that stuff is in the upper deep or the lower deep?
No. So the one thing I wouldn't do, unless you have, if that lower deep has a bunch of honey, so generally the bees are pretty good about organizing themselves in a efficient, natural way where they'll put the honey above the brood. Sometimes though, if the bees get stuck with brood in the upper deep and for whatever reason, they put a bunch of honey below them, if that bottom deep was full of honey, then it would be advisable to move it above the colony. But what you won't want to do is move that lower deep above the brood and above the cluster if it's not full of honey, because the bees will be trying to move up into honey throughout the winter. And if they move up into empty frames of comb with no honey in it, there won't be any food there for them, and they'll end up starving out. And it's incredibly difficult to provide them food if they're not sort of at the top of the hive when they run out of their own natural stores of food. So if for some reason your bees kind of got a little confused and put the honey below the brood, then switching those boxes and putting the honey above the cluster would be advisable. But if those bottom frames are empty, you can either just leave them there if you don't want to mess with your hives because it's cold, or you can remove them and leave them in a single deep and then, you know, figure out a way to provide them enough food to make it through winter.
Chris, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm wondering, Paul here, can you give us a visual of the upper deep and lower deep and a bit of more explanation? Because that's a bit of inside baseball.
It's true. Yep. So when people talk about a deep or a medium, they're talking about the boxes that the hive is made up of. So what a honeybee colony is and the hive that they live in, there are these wooden boxes that have no top and no bottom. And then you have a bottom board and a cover. And so basically that allows you to expand and retract the size of the hive by stacking more boxes on or removing boxes from the hive. And because they have no top or no bottom, it makes a single cavity that the bees live in. So if they lived in a natural cavity, that size wouldn't change throughout the year. So they would, you know, move in and they would live their life there. And when that cavity gets full, they would get crowded and they would end up swarming, which is how they reproduce, which is when half the bees and the old queen sort of fly off. That's when you see them sort of hanging in the tree in that big, you know, ball of bees. And then they'll send out scouts to find a new home. When they find a new home, they'll all move into that new home and the old colony will raise a new queen. But because we like to manage our bees for our own production and our own uses, we sort of manipulate them by expanding the size of that colony. So to prevent them from swarming, we add those boxes and add space to the hive. And then they just keep filling that full of honey because their cue to swarm has a lot to do with being crowded. There's obviously other factors involved. And then in the fall, the late summer, we remove some of those boxes of surplus honey, leaving them just enough honey to make it through winter, and we enjoy the benefits of their labor with that extra honey.
Ah, so kind of so like making an addition to their home at just the right time when they need
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So if, you know, someone, if you had a hoarder and you're, you know, and you just kind of expanded their house and let them fill that section, and then you, you know, took away some of the stuff they hoarded and put them back to the small, that's kind of what we're doing, except that the bees are hoarding, you know, honey instead of old newspapers and whatever else it might be that they would be hoarding. And so a deep is, there's different sizes of those boxes that people will add. So a deep is the 9 3/4 inch box, and a medium then would be the 6 3/4 inch box. So traditionally in Wisconsin, people tend to overwinter their bees in a double deep setup. So they'll have two of those deep boxes. Personally, I like to give them a little bit more space. I like to give them a two deeps and a medium just to give them some extra space. But the traditional way is the two of those deep boxes. And so the way you'd like to see your bees to be prepared for winter is once you're going into winter, that top deep or that top box, all of the comb and that would be full of honey. Mm. And that's going to be about 90 pounds of honey.
Wow.
That they're going to eat over the course of winter. And then the bees themselves would be sort of clustered in that bottom box. And then throughout winter, as they eat that honey, they move up through the comb, eating their way through that honey until spring, they end up at the top of the hive. And then they sort of expand themselves and push themselves back down to the lower box as they store up honey throughout the year. And when you do that, it's also easy to see when your bees are starting to run out of food. As they reach the top of the box, you'll know that, you know, they're running low on food. And then you can give them some of that supplemental feeding, the winter patties, the dry sugar, things like that.
Wow, Paul Zielinski, we're learning so much about winter beekeeping. He's a beekeeper who focuses on breeding bees more adapted to our winters, selling those colonies, and he's part of the Dane County Beekeepers Association. You can join in with your questions about beekeeping and what you have noticed year to year. If bees are in and around you, maybe you've been you had colonies for years, what can you tell us? 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Jeff now, joining us from Richland Center. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have the last caller. You answered some questions that I had, and it was a wealth of information. Thank you very much. My question, the big question is, what temperature should I wait for to warm up to get it back into the hives? I have a swarm that I caught, and the swarm is I didn't know I had one in there, and in the trap, swarm trap, and I've just found it like a week ago, and there is no honey in it. There's just a cluster of bees, and I was thinking of putting them into the other hives that I have. Is that an idea?
So you're looking to combine them with an existing hive?
Right.
Or are you putting, when you say put them in a hive, are you putting them in an empty box, or you're combining them with a hive with other bees?
No, I'm putting them with the other bees.
Okay.
I did not notice a queen with that cluster in that trap. I didn't find a queen in there, but there was a notable number of bees in there, and they had a lot of extra comb that they made. But mm-hmm. It was like they're in the tail end of their life cycle or something. There's just, you know, there's not a whole lot of them in there. But I was hoping to just put them in with, there's only like two frames of bees.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this time of year, like I said, it's relatively difficult. Sometimes this time of year, it's, you know, 70 degrees and you're working on your bees. That's where I find fall to be the most challenging time for your bees, because we're, you know, running out of time to do things, and you never know whether it's, you know, going to be next week or a month from now. So there's a couple ways you could do that. You could try to do a newspaper combine, which is where you put the hives together separated by a piece of newspaper, and then the bees will chew their way through that newspaper slowly so that they don't fight, and then they'll combine themselves naturally. Or if there is no queen, if you get a warm day, you can just kind of shake those bees out into the grass in front of your other hives, and then they'll sort of enter those hives and sort of beg to be part of those hives, and then be able to join those hives. So it depends if you're trying to, you know, combine them with a queen or with brood, or just get those bees to join the other hives. But looking at the forecast for the next week, the only day I see that there's kind of warm enough temperatures to really be looking at your hives, at least by me here just south of Madison, is next week. It looks like we're going to get one day in the 60s. So that would be kind of the window that I see coming up for any beekeepers who want to do some last looks at their hives. Mm.
Talking about winter beekeeping with Paul Zielinski. He's a beekeeper working to breed bees in Wisconsin winters. Do you work in the honey industry? Have you seen a decrease or increase in production lately? Maybe you use a lot of honey for your work. Tell us about it. What questions do you have on winter beekeeping? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Paul Zielinski here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Paul Zielinski. He's treasurer of the Dane County Beekeepers Association, which works to promote and improve the beekeeping practices for hobby beekeepers and commercial beekeepers. They have an active online community of hundreds of local beekeepers. I was checking it out yesterday. They've been chatting about bee barns in recent days and about overwintering hives inside. Let's go back to the calls now. Eve is with us from Wauwatosa. Hi, Eve.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is, how do we know if one hive is robbing another hive, and how would we prevent it?
So it's very difficult to know the hive that's doing the robbing, but it's pretty easy to see the hive that's being robbed. So if you keep an eye on your hive, you'll kind of, it depends how difficult or how extreme the robbing is, but you'll see these bees sort of hovering in front of the hive and kind of looking for entrances other than the normal entrance. And they'll be fighting generally by the entrances as the hive that's being robbed is trying to defend themselves. And often if it gets real bad, you'll start to see, you know, dead bees on the entrance or in front of the entrance where the bees are fighting. And the best way to prevent robbing is to reduce the entrances of the hive that's being robbed so that the bees in that hive have a lot easier time defending their hive. So if you reduce all the entrances down to a much smaller entrance, there's a lot less place for the robbers to get into the hive, and then those bees are more able to defend themselves.
Eve, have you seen that situation at your hives?
I've seen bees hovering around, but I don't know if they're fighting or not. The reason I asked is there's just this huge discrepancy between my two hives. One of them's doing really well. We got 50 pounds of honey off of it, and the other one, there's barely anything.
Yep. So often you'll see discrepancies in hives just on different strength. One might have a better queen than the other and have produced a better population. Usually you won't see much robbing in a hive during the honey flow and the honey production. The bees would prefer to go find flowers and, you know, do their business as bees, collecting honey and pollen from the flowers. It's usually in the late summer when the honey flow comes to an end, and then there's a bunch of foragers who have nothing better to do and they're looking for honey, and that's when they'll go rob the other hives. Or if this time of year we get some warm temperatures, now that we've had the freeze and there's really no flowers left, again, that's when you'll see problems with the robbing. So the best thing to do is kind of sit by your hive and observe for a bit and see if you're seeing that fighting by the entrance. The other thing you might see is you'll see some sort of waxy bald bees that are just acting sort of suspiciously entering the hive. Or if you see bees that are loaded down with honey and nectar leaving the hive and flying off, that's another sign. Normally, of course, you'd see the bees loaded up with nectar entering the hive, bringing that into the hive. So if you're seeing them leave that, you know, that's a more dangerous situation.
Eve, thanks so much for the call. Paul, I know you said you're going back to the basics with 50 colonies. Mm-hmm. What is the likelihood of having bees die in the winter months? How difficult is it?
Well, that is a very interesting question. So I think in Wisconsin, the average loss of colonies is somewhere around 50%. I think last year it might have been even as high as 60%. There's some studies and some questionnaires that people can fill out to report their bee losses. Traditionally, so I've been doing this for about 10 years, and I've always had very good luck with overwintering, and I've only lost about 20% as a high. But the last 2 years, I've actually lost about 80%. So it's kind of reversed itself. And so that's why I said I'm going back to the basics kind of. And the last couple of years is when I was expanding to be a lot larger. I used to just be a hobbyist. And then when I left the DMV to do this more full time, I had many more hives. So this year, I'm just trying to give them that extra bit of attention to try to see if I can figure out, you know, maybe where it's my fault. Of course, it could also just be, you know, the seasons or the climates or, you know, different diseases that may have like come in. And I know there's also a lot of talk that the mites have been getting more tenacious over the years. So for me, I'm kind of just trying to figure out maybe if it's something that I'm doing that the last couple of years has been making them less successful.
Doing a little bit more of an experiment maybe this winter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
exactly.
We're talking with Paul Zielinski, who's with us this hour. He's been a beekeeper in Dane County for about 10 years. We're looking at winter beekeeping with your questions. Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Paul, why is honey different colors?
Because it comes from different flowers. So the bees go and collect the nectar, and then they store it in the hive, and they sort of dry that down and cure that into honey. So depending on the flower that it comes from, it'll be a different color. Generally, the earlier spring flowers tend to have lighter colored honeys, and then the later fall flowers tend to have darker honeys.
And going back to the dangers that honeybees face, you know, we've talked a lot about mites, but there are also like wax moths that seem to damage the hive. And what do they do?
So wax moths in a healthy colony are probably not much of a danger. But wax moths will come and they eat the wax, but they don't actually eat the wax. They eat the protein in the hive. So it might be the pollen that the bees stored or old brood. And wax moths can devastate comb that's being stored. But usually the bees in a healthy hive will be able to keep them at bay and keep them out of the hive. But they can be very damaging if a hive is weak or if you're storing comb. And then there's also small hive beetles, which is another pest that's relatively new. Luckily in Wisconsin, so far, they haven't seemed to be overwintering particularly well, but the migratory beekeepers bring them in every year. And so those can also become a problem in hives, and they can devastate a hive as well if the hive isn't capable of keeping those out of the hive.
And there's also chalk brood, a fungal disease, and sac brood. What does that do?
Yep. So there's, you know, sac brood and chalk brood and bee paralysis virus and all sorts of different disease and things. So the chalk brood and the sac brood are different larval infestations. So the chalk brood will infest the larvae, and then as it's pupating, it'll kill that and turn it into basically a hard lump, much like chalk, which is where the name comes from. And obviously, you know, if you're losing your baby bees, the colony won't be doing particularly well. And then, of course, there's the fowl broods. There's European and American fowl brood, which are also very dangerous. The European fowl brood is a bacterial infection that can actually be treated with antibiotics. And some of the commercial people will use antibiotics as a preventative measure. Most of the hobbyists would only use antibiotics in a treatment sense if they see evidence of fowl brood. But American fowl brood is the extremely dangerous one because it does not get cured with antibiotics. So if you find American fowl brood in your hive, the only way to deal with that is actually to close up that hive and burn the entire hive to destroy it so that it can't infest any other hives.
Oh, wow. How should you monitor your hives in the winter? I know, you know, the temperature is really important.
Yep. So during the year when they're active, you'll kind of inspect your hive every week, every 2 weeks, you know, every month, depending on how personable you want to be with your hives. During the winter, it's actually best to just kind of leave your hive alone. You don't want to be opening it. It's too cold. But you might just want to kind of take a peek, make sure the entrances are not, you know, covered with ice or snow. Maybe on some of the warm days, just kind of take a quick peek in the cover to make sure that the bees still have food and that they're not, you know, at the top of the hive starving, so that you might want to give them emergency food. But you really don't want to do too much to your hives during the winter. Obviously it's cold, and then you just, you know, cross your fingers and hope spring comes and your bees are still alive when spring comes.
We have less than a minute left, but can you leave us with some advice for beekeeping here in Wisconsin? Anything that we could really think about?
I guess the best advice for anyone interested in beekeeping is to just have fun and always be prepared to learn. I've been doing this 10 years, and I would say I still don't really know everything I need to know about bees. So that's what's fun about beekeeping, is that it's always a chance to continue learning and continue figuring things out. I personally love the Dane County Beekeepers, that listserv. There's great discussions on there. Lots of different opinions. They always say if you ask 10 beekeepers, you'll get a dozen opinions.
Well, Paul, we've enjoyed learning from you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much for letting me be here.
Paul Zielinski is a beekeeper focusing on breeding bees more adaptive to our winters. He is also treasurer of the Dane County Beekeepers Association. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.